You're listening to Breadbox Media. Find out more at breadboxmedia.com.
You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Welcome. I am your host, Dr. Michelle, and you're walking with me today on this road of life with me as we walk through Dr. Michelle Live. There are so many ways to get a hold of us, to partake, to participate, to be part of this journey. 573-4BREAD-4. You can text during our live show, which is right this minute now, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. Pacific time, and 12 p.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern time. And you all fill in the rest with the central and the mountain and all that little hour here or there. Welcome to text call. You're welcome to email anytime, DM live at breadboxmedia.com. You can also access all of the archives of this show and all the other contributors of Breadbox Media by logging on to breadboxmedia.podbean.com. So there's just so many ways, and there's so many ways to participate. We are growing very quickly. So, you know, praise God for that. This is really awesome. And that is my new ringtone. How do you like that? I didn't turn off my phone. I will turn it off now. All right. A little bit more soothing than my timba drums that I seem to enjoy. I might go back to them. They are kind of fun. All right. So mothers, your daughters, what responsibility do you have for your daughters? Okay. You already can answer some of that. You can give me all day long. We can talk about your responsibilities for your daughters. But your daughters are made in the image of God and in the example of Mary. And are you upholding that, or are you putting in stumbling blocks? Are you, without understanding, without knowing, actually, we used to call it hobbling, your daughters? In ancient, or not so ancient, I think it was outlawed in the maybe early 1900s or maybe late 1800s, where they used to bind the feet of women in China when they were babies. And at some point it was deemed a thing of beauty. See how our mind can switch around? We can take our own daughters and we can, and we, I'm saying we, don't say, well, that was China, that was then. Do you think we're doing the same now? I will give you an example that you may or may not even have ever thought about. And it's a little graphic, so I'll do it on the other side of the break. So after the other side of the break, if you want to, you know, turn it down a little bit for children around, you can do that. So I will give you an example on the other side of the break of how we are hobbling our children this minute and physically doing it in equivalent or worse of what they did in China. So, but in China, so we are the Chinese. We are just people on this planet. And in China, they would take the babies and bind their feet, wind them up, wound them out. You can find pictures, just Google them. Many of you already know this. You learn it in history, I hope. And the feet don't grow. Just like you can shape the, you know, you see all these things about the skulls of aliens and all that. Well, people can change the shape of an adult's head if they start when they're a baby. And they did that in a lot of cultures where they flatten the back of it, or they do different things, or, you know, they put on different, they can take a malleable bone as it's forming and change its shape. So they bind these feet and they, of the little girls, the baby girls, and the, they grow up and they have these teeny tiny appendages, very much akin to, if you remember, the tragedy of thalidomide, which in the 1950s was a, I think of 50s or 60s, was a medication that was, quote, safe, unquote, given to pregnant women for their morning nausea. And it seemed completely safe. Well, sadly, many children were born with these, with their arms or their legs, their appendages, their limbs being non-formed. So they would have almost like, they would look like flippers, small little flippers instead of long arms. So that's something that happened. We also know that women who were given progesterone, which is a very, it's a hormone we all have, men and women, but women have progesterone, very important hormone. You need it. And it circulates in progest. It's for the help of the gestation. But it was given as a test to find, as a pregnancy test, actually. And so what they found, though, was that it was causing a lot of harm. And you didn't really see it until the babies were adults. We had another medicine that was given in all good faith that caused for, I think it was for morning sickness as well. And you know what? I might be confused that maybe, I need to look that up, that the thalidomide, I think, was given for morning sickness. I need to be corrected if that is wrong. And if you know, 573-4-BREAD-4, just text it, 573-4-BREAD-4. But there was another medication, I think it was DES, that was given, and babies seemed just fine, kids seemed just fine. But when the young girls went to wanted their families, they found they couldn't have children. And it was traced back to this medication. It messed with their reproductive system. So and that's not what I'm going to tell you about. There's things happening right here, right now, today that aren't as obvious as some of the other things that I want to inform you about. But we'll do that on the other side of the break. But getting back to these children in China, and this is the metaphor for what I want to talk about today. In whatever reason it originally came about that somebody thought it was a good idea, and my guess is it was all about control. Somebody didn't just wake up one day in China and go, I think it would be really beautiful for all women to have little feet they can't walk on. So they have to be carried around. May have been under the auspices of royalty, but my guess is it caused them to be more, what do you do? You know, you clip the wings. They can't walk. You can't, the person, those tiny little feet couldn't hold up their weight. So this was an entire, after a while, it got to be a thing of beauty and a thing of royalty, this perversion, this deformity, this hobbling. And it was somehow perverted in the minds of the people that had the power that this was something to aspire to. And it did get outlawed eventually. So, and you can all look up the history of that. It's something that I studied a long time ago, but it's always stayed with me. So if I get a little of the facts, you know, as far as like why or how would it actually begin, I'll look that up as well. But the reality is it was a definite practice, and it definitely ended up being outlawed because it was consciously deforming a human being from birth on up. Same way we don't have eunuchs, you know, we just don't realize you don't do that to people. So, but what are you doing with your daughters that might be doing something that might be crippling them in their journey in life, their ability to stand on their feet and be who God wants them to be? What would God make of them? How does God make your daughter? Forget you. You know, you can say it. I can say it. God made me. He made me in his image and likeness. And my words can say he made me in his image and likeness. Therefore, he is powerful. He is love. He is eternal. He is ever wise. He is enlightened. He is only love. He will not fail. He will not grow faint. He will not grow weary, and he will not be defined, controlled, manipulated, or abused. And he will shine his light no matter who doesn't like it. Now, for a lot of you, that's like, ooh, bristle. Sometimes it's bristling for me too. And so where I need to go with you in this is to say, no, step back. Look at it in the example of Mary. Because we look at Mary as humble, submissive, sweet, wonderful, little, tiny Mary. But we also, at the same time, acknowledge the extreme extreme, shocking radicalness of her yes. We do celebrate that. We celebrate that all the time in our memoraries. We celebrate that in our, the prayer. You can all let me know. Jennifer, help me. The name is escaping me, where we reenact the moment that Gabriel came to her and that she said yes. That couldn't have been easy. And she wasn't, the Angelus. Thank you, Jennifer. Thank you, the Angelus. Yes, the Angelus. And we commemorate that. Thank God for the Catholics. We do commemorate that. And why do we do that? Because it was a turning pivotal point in the history of the earth. It was also a turning pivotal point in the history of the soul of mankind. There was no special feat. There was no having to mate with a god. There was no having to do anything but saying, I am a little tiny girl who is a very faithful person in my culture, in my family, and I will do as they say, and I will be betrothed like everyone else of my peers. And when the angel came to her, she just said, wow, yes. And she didn't say it like that. She said it however she said it. But we put our own selves in there and our 2016 brains. That's, wow, we have to look and see what a radical act that was. We're going to revisit this on the other side of the break. This might be the time I'll start off with it where we want to kind of close it up for the kids for a minute, and we'll go back to it on the other side of the break. This is Dr. Michelle.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
All right. Well, welcome back. I am your host, Dr. Michelle, and you are with me today on Dr. Michelle Live. I'm talking to mothers today about daughters. And, dads can listen to this, too, because you inadvertently hobble your children. I'm going to read you some statistics of a cosmetic procedure that is growing rapidly. And a lot of you don't even know it exists. Many of you do. Many of you don't. There's a lot of reasons we think. So I want to talk to you about it. Now, this is not going to be the reason for this program. I want to give you a way of empowering your daughters to help them be the powerful, eternal, full of grace people that Mary gives us the example that they're supposed to be. Not these self-mutilating human beings. And by that, I do not mean tattoos. I do not mean, if they have been injured, some kind of plastic surgery. I mean that we are going to a place of ridiculousness. And when you hear what the cosmetic surgeons, how they frame the reasons for these procedures, I hope it knocks your socks off, because I look at it and I go, what? Really? What is this? Now, we already know that there is I'm not even going to go right now to breast implants. That's like old hat. But I want to go to something else. So here I'm going to read to you. Now, remember, we're going to go the rest of this program talking about a path that will lead them to purpose and to lead them to love. But you can't do that when you tell your daughters, almost out of the womb, every part of you is disgusting and needs to be surgically altered. every part of you that came out of my womb is not for human consumption. We know this. Part of being a girl on the face of this earth is to be surgerized. You are defective. This is how I see it. Now, you all can call me and tell me, no, I'm wrong, I'm wrong, I'm wrong. And that's okay. I hope you do. 573-4BREAD-4. And I am not begrudging anyone their plastic surgery. I have lots of friends who have had plastic surgery and many different parts of their bodies. And I don't begrudge them. And many do feel better. But how much of it is that we put in our heads that we are now, because the mantra was, don't do it for somebody else, do it for yourself. Well, guess what? There was a time when, as a psychiatrist, I would have to be consulted by a plastic surgeon, not for a teenager, but for anybody, or even for gastric surgery, to make sure that they were mentally okay, that there wasn't some other odd thing going on. I'm not sure if that's still the case, because I'm out of that particular realm. I was not in the realm of plastic surgery, but in training and all that kind of thing, you have to be in different pockets of psychiatry. So that was part of the deal. But I can't imagine, I don't even know where it is today. I will begin what I'm going to read you by telling you, reiterating something I mentioned in an archive that's now archived, a past show a long, long time ago, when in the Journal of Plastic Surgery, or Plastic Surgery Medical Journal, probably the American, put on by the American Society of Aesthetic Plastic Surgery, there was a letter to the editor from a plastic surgeon to his colleagues or her colleagues. And it was very interesting because I thought, wow, that takes a lot of courage. And the courage that I saw was for this plastic surgeon to say, you know, now with the internet, we put up all these pictures of normal people, and we then put up a picture of a surgerized person, and we quote unquote let them make the decision to have themselves improved. Because what we do is we give them normal, we put something ideal next to them. They then think, he didn't quite say it this way, but this is how he wrote his article, or she wrote her article. I can't remember if it was a man or a woman. And then we let them think, then by comparison, what they are is abnormal. And then we supply the solution to their fear. Oh my gosh. He or she said so much more than she knows. Before I get to my article, I'm going to also give you a personal experience. It was in 1990, I think, 7 or 8. It might have been 2000, but I think it was somewhere around there. My son's girlfriend at the time was going to spring break to a beach. And when she came back, she was remarking on all the girls her age, this was right out of high school, 17, 18 years old, who had, when they laid down on the beach, this is an adult audience show right now. We'll revert to a non-adult audience, and I'll tell you when, that their breast didn't just flatten out change when they laid down on their backs to get sun. And I said, isn't that weird? I mean, all these natural situations where you have that. She goes, no, what you don't understand. Now, this was 20 some years ago. She said, what you don't understand is natural looks unnatural to us now. All right. Now, fast forward 20 years. You know what? No, I'm going to back up then, fast forward only 5 or 6 years. I am down in Florida at a medical school, and while I'm waiting, I was just sitting, it might have been lunchtime or something, I pick up the school paper. There was a paper then. So I pick up the school paper. This might have been 2003 or 4. I pick up the paper, and I see, read all what's going on, and all the scientific research and this and that. And on the back, it had a lot of advertising. One of them was advertising plastic surgeon for labioplasty. Now, what is labioplasty? Labioplasty is the surgery for and on the labia. A woman has both labia majora and labia minora, which are the what is in common terms called the vaginal lips of a woman's vagina. That's their genitals. There was for labioplasty. Why is that? Why was that there along with pizza and dentistry and everything else? Because it was a cosmetic surgery. Because labioplasty began creeping into regular society way back. And now it is one of the fastest growing areas of plastic surgery. And I said I would read to you this article. I will probably read it to you on the other side of the break. But it turns out the one article I want to read you is actually from the Society of Plastic Surgery. It's this American Society for Aesthetic Plastic Surgery. And this is the article I will read you is an article that says the American Society for Aesthetic Plastic Surgery reports an increase in two popular cosmetic procedures that fall below the belt. So this was from, it was a general statistics survey and trend. That is the website. And it came out of New York in February 25th of 2014. And that was 2 years ago now. So, or more than 2 years ago. Now, before I do that, let's go to another article. It was on the Alternet. It's about gender and gender. This, and these are all kind of supporting this. But it says, very young women are undergoing the knife to sculpt parts that are still growing and changing. Teenage girls increasingly requesting labioplasty to get the perfect designer vagina. Okay? And then it says, never underestimate the power of beauty myths to manufacture inadequacies where before there were none. A little over a decade ago, labioplasty, the partial or whole removal of parts of the labia minora, also known as the inner vaginal lips, was a relatively obscure plastic surgery compared with nips, tucks, and lifts to various other parts. In more recent years, the number of women opting for the surgery has grown exponentially. Now, very young women, girls still in their teens, are requesting the procedure in numbers growing so quickly that even some practitioners are concerned. The American College of Obstetrics and Gynecologists has met increased labioplasty demand among adolescents with a set of recommendations for doctors, most of which are aimed at forestalling the surgery. The organization's Committee on Adolescent Healthcare suggests clinicians treating teen patients, quote, should have good working knowledge of non-surgical alternatives, provide education and reassurance regarding normal variation in anatomy, growth, and development, offer patient counseling and assessment of the adolescent's physical maturity and emotional readiness before any surgical intervention is undertaken, and respond to any indications of, quote, body dysmorphic disorder, unquote, with a referral to a mental health provider. All right, we're going to revisit this on the other side of the break. I'm going to get into what the plastic surgeons actually say about it. And then the rest of the program is going to be on how you can counteract this trend. I'm Dr. Michelle. See you on the other side of the break.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Welcome back. I am your host, Dr. Michelle, and you are with me today on Dr. Michelle Live. All right, so I'm going to finish reading you this article, and then I will read you what the Society of American Plastic Surgeons has to say. Remember, language is power. There's lots of suggestibility in how things are presented, and you really need to get all extremes. And that's why, you know, you can't just get your any source from any source. You can't just get like one source, even if it is, you know, a religious source or goes on your way. Look at everything. Look at everything. And then you need to be able to make up your mind, but you also need to be able to take a breath a minute and pray. Pray. Am I being swayed by the plea by reason? Am I being swayed by someone else's reason? We've gone to the Book of Wisdom before, and sometimes things make sense to us. We go, yeah, I started the program talking about how it used to be to gain more acceptance. It turned out this way because at one point plastic surgery was just for birth defects or things, perhaps Hollywood celebrities would alter their noses, their ears, their faces in order to be able to have some kind of Grecian ideal or some kind of ideal on what makes a good person in the movies or on stage. But it was not something the common person had. And then it began when people were of Italian descent, which I am, of other descent, that the noses came about. And, well, I want to read this article. I've got lots of stories, but some of them are just heartbreaking to me, and I could go on for a long time. All right, so here we are. I'm going to backtrack then and just read this article. So when I finished before the break, I left with a paragraph about the body dysmorphic disorder. That's the thing that would come to a mental health provider, a psychiatrist. Perhaps there's another mental health provider that would be versed in these kinds of things to evaluate whether there's a body dysmorphic disorder, which is a huge thing, and it can be created. That's why you hear all the time, go to a dentist. My dentist was telling me the other day that even with little tiny dental procedures, it clicks something in the brain that causes people to, oh, well, then I need this and that. And then they get obsessed with perfection. They get obsessed with the next thing and the next thing and the next thing. It's just something that occurs. So, all right. So it says, the American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology, which unequivocally stated its disapproval regarding cosmetic vaginal procedures back in 2007, so that's almost 10 years ago, felt the need to issue another opinion focused on teens. Now we're talking teens, your daughters. They're not out of the house yet. Requesting the surgery is a testament to how many girls are looking to get the operation. Now I'm going to go back to 2007, if I can, and read to you. This was from September 2007, and this is just this is the conclusion. This was from the American, now this is almost 9 years ago, the Committee on Gynecological Practice. This is from the American Congress of Obstetrics and Gynecology. This is an article written for doctors, two doctors, by the actual committee that governs doctors. It was in number 378 of the American College of Obstetrics and Gynecologists committee opinion. This is their opinion. And it was reaffirmed in 2014. Committee on Gynecological Practice. And I don't know when they changed it, so I will find that out for you. Vaginal rejuvenation and cosmetic vaginal procedures. The abstract. And the abstract is just kind of the general. It's going to tell you what the whole article is saying. So the abstract is the synopsis in medical terms. So-called, quote, vaginal rejuvenation, unquote, or, quote, designer vaginoplasty. Now, this is the vagina, not the labia. Or, quote, revirgination and, quote, G-spot amplification, unquote, are vaginal surgical procedures being offered by some practitioners. These procedures are not medically indicated, and the safety and effectiveness of these procedures have not been documented. Clinicians who receive requests from patients for such procedures should discuss with the patient the reason for her request and perform an evaluation for any physical signs or symptoms that may indicate the need. I want to emphasize that word, need, for surgical intervention. And now we've watered down the need. I'm interjecting here. That's why I mentioned the beginning of the program for, well, it will make me feel better. No, I'm not doing it for a man. I'm not doing it for the world. I'm not doing it because I saw a picture in a magazine. I'm not doing it because I've watched porn. I'm doing it because I'm doing it for me. Therefore, I don't have that's my need. It's a mental health thing for me. It's a self-esteem thing for me. And I'll support that in a second. So need is a very important word. It's a very nebulous word for surgical intervention. And in medical terms, it means, do you have a surgical need to have a surgery? Do you have a medical need to have a surgery? And that usually means to fix something or to heal something that will cause you to be unhealthy and not live a normal life. And now we're saying that not having some idealized, which we don't even know what it is, version of genitals is unhealthy. Women should be informed about the lack of data supporting the efficacy of these procedures and their potential complications, including infection, altered sensation, dyspareunia, which means, you know, painful intercourse, adhesions, and scarring. There have been an increasing number of practitioners offering various types of vaginal surgeries marketed as ways to enhance appearance or sexual gratification. Among the types of procedures being promoted are the so-called vaginal rejuvenation, unquote, designer vaginoplasty, revirginization, G-spot amplification, and they're not even talking right there about the labioplasty. So it's a long article. So I'm going to go and get back to my, I'm going to read their conclusion, and then I'm going to go back to the other article I was starting with from 2015. It is deceptive. It says clinicians who receive requests from patients for such procedures should discuss with the patients the reasons and for her request and perform an evaluation. A patient's concern regarding the appearance of her genitalia may be alleviated by a frank discussion of the wide range of normal genitalia and reassurance that the appearance of the external genitalia varies significantly from woman to woman. Concerns regarding sexual gratification may be addressed by careful evaluation for any sexual dysfunction and exploration of non-surgical interventions, including counseling. It is deceptive to give the impression that vaginal rejuvenation, designer vaginoplasty, revirginization, G-spot amplification, or any such procedures are accepted as routine surgical practices. See, it is deceptive to accept that it is, that to put forth that it's accepted routine practice. Absence of data supporting the safety and efficacies make these recommendations untenable. This is the American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology in 2007's report. The Overseers Committee's report. It says patients who are anxious or insecure about their genital appearance or sexual function may be further traumatized by undergoing an unproven surgical procedure with obvious risks. Women, not teens, should be informed about the lack of data supporting the efficacy of these procedures and their potential complications, including infection, altered sensation, dyspareunia, adhesions, and scarring. All right, so in the time we have remaining, I want to give you some real life. And these aren't just people who were referred to me. These are people I know. I know these women who, with even just breast augmentation, for the rest of their life, have a altered sense of sensation where any touch to their breast or nipples are painful, very painful. Now, a lot of you, and I know many doctors, I know many Catholic people, Catholic doctors who have had breast augmentation and they're just fine. But Is that something you need to risk if you don't have a sure deformity or you don't have exactly some people in there and they're fine and they say, well, yes, it's worth it. But I'm talking about labioplasty now and your teenage daughters. So let's put it in perspective. If you've already had procedures, you know, don't get freaked. This is just information. But I want to show you in a blink of an eye, not even a generation, how even these statements that have been put forth from the American Congress of Obstetrics and Gynecology, their recommendations that are very strong worded, have modified just a bit because of the droves of people that are requesting these procedures, and now they are teenage girls who are living at home with their parents. So we will get back to the break. From the break, we will read the other article and then go into some of the more saving graces of this whole dilemma. All right, we will see you on the other side of the break. I am Dr. Michelle. Take a breath. Know that this is something that we're facing every single day. Your daughters, believe it or not, are being faced with it every single day. All right. See you on the other side of the break.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Welcome back. I am your host, Dr. Michelle. You know, before I go into any program, and I almost, because of different things, obligations that I have, I almost did not do today's program and play a repeat, but I didn't. And before any program, I do pray, I really do, and I don't always follow. And I made a little commitment yesterday to, I just asked that I have more impetus to follow whatever inspires me, the Holy Spirit, to let it happen. And so today, I'd already said, I probably wouldn't be on today, but, you know, when I did my morning prayers, I just said, you know, if you need me to say something. And so I found a few little things, and but I didn't know I was going to be talking about this. So here we go. I did not plan to talk on this, but I said, you know, I always say if somebody needs to hear something, so somebody out there needs to hear this. All right. So remember your daughters when I'm reading you these things. So I'm going to have to just finish the upside tomorrow, because this is like a public service program today. I want you to understand what's happening and what your daughters are seeing, and maybe even why. Okay, so I think we finished the article, didn't we? Yes, we did, from the American Congress on Obstetrics and Gynecology. It wasn't just an article, it was their journal article, from their journal, November 378. That's their journal number. You can look it up, September 2007. So we also have an article in Statistics, Surveys, and Trends that was published in 2014. I hope I can get to that. I want to read you. You all know the book, Our Bodies, Ourselves. That's something that came out way out in the 60s. Oprah has had the woman, the doctor who founded this, who wrote the book. What's her name? Christine something. Let me see. I'm sorry. Let's see. It's evidence-based. Well, let's see. Our Bodies, Ourselves was first published in 1971. And you all may think that it's a women's lib thing and it's all about, you know what? I don't care. It's like, let's get some information out here. And at least there's some health information out here. And this is showing you, this isn't just some crazy religious person talking, thinking, oh, we need to all have Birkenstocks and ankle length, nondescript clothing. No, I love fashion and I love looking good and I love girls looking good. And I love girls who are cute. You know, this is, we need to be our own. Mary didn't just, you know, wasn't, I don't know what Mary was. We don't have pictures of her, so I won't go there. All right. So here's from Our Bodies, Ourselves. Information inspires action. This was written by Diana Zuckerman, PhD, April 4th, 2012, and was revised on May 6, 2016. So just a few months ago. All right, teens and cosmetic surgery. In 2015, more than 226,000 cosmetic procedures were performed on patients between 13 and 19. 226,000 little girls between 13 and 19 had cosmetic procedures, including nearly 65,000. I have lived in towns way less than 65,000. I've lived in college towns way less than 65,000, including nearly 65,000 surgical procedures such as nose reshaping, breast lifts, breast augmentation, liposuction, and tummy tucks. 13 and 19, between those ages. That means there were 13-year-olds and 19-year-olds. And they're not talking about, you know, maybe some of them broke their noses. So we have to put that in the mix too. But for breast lift between 13 and 19, how many of you out there, raise your hand, who've had changes in your breasts between the age of 19 and wherever you are now? Very few studies have been conducted to examine the risks for teens of these increasingly common surgeries. Research is especially needed for the more controversial procedures such as breast implantation, liposuction, and genital plastic surgery. There is no question that reconstructive surgeries can benefit children and youth. Surgical procedures to correct cleft palates and lips, for example, are not controversial. Plastic surgery to correct unattractive facial features that can attract ridicule, such as a prominent nose and ears, are generally accepted in the United States. I need to stop there. Really? What teenager, I mean, how perfect are you going to make your teenager to change their being wherever they came from? Now, I'm not downing you if you've already done this or you're considering it or something really out of the norm, but I'm telling you, there is a price to pay here, so you better look carefully and really be sure. It says, however, culture phenomena such as surgical makeovers, okay, I'm continuing the article. However, cultural phenomena such as surgical makeovers on numerous television programs and unrelenting pressures on teens to conform to beauty standards make it increasingly difficult to agree on what constitutes, quote, normal, unquote, appearance. And when the desire to improve one's appearance is questionable or even crosses the line to psychopathology. In this commentary, I will focus on elective cosmetic procedures on otherwise healthy adolescent with no illness or impairment. Plastic surgery in a developing teen. One of the concerns about plastic surgery, I'm going to do this because this is a commentary and she pulled all bunch of information together and it's more concise than I can give you on a program. One of the concerns about plastic surgeries on adolescents is that their bodies are still maturing. In addition to development, that may occur in the late teens, growth charts indicate that the average young woman gains weight between the ages of 18 and 21, and that is likely to change her desire or need for breast implant and liposuction. There are no epidemiological studies or clinical trials. No. No, she researched this. No epidemiological studies or clinical trials on the safety and long-term risks of these procedures for adolescents. Although the FDA approved saline breast implants for women's ages 18 and older, it is legal for physicians to perform breast augmentation for anyone under 18 as a quote off-label unquote use. In 2015 alone, 7,840 girls and young women, she distinguished girls and young women between the ages of 13 and 19 underwent breast augmentation surgery, with an additional 1,797 teens receiving breast lifts. Silicone gel breast implants were approved by the FDA in 2006, but only for women ages 22 and older. These restrictions reflect the greater concerns that the FDA has about the risks of silicone gel implants and teens' ability to fully comprehend those risks. Really, when I was 13, could I understand what it would be like to be 50 years old and have scars and adhesions, or not be able to feel the same sensation when I breastfed my baby 30 years ago? No, you can't think of those things when you're 13. That's me putting that in there. I'm getting outraged. All right. Will adolescents who want to improve their appearance rationally consider the risks? Most women who get breast implants have at least one. Most women. Who get breast implants have at least one serious complication within the first 3 years, including infection, hematomas and seromas, capsular contractions, sometimes a painful hardening of the breast, loss of nipple sensation, and hypertrophic scarring, which means big, thick scars. Since breast implants typically last 10 years, an adolescent will require repeated surgeries throughout her lifetime. Breast implants also interfere with mammography and increase the likelihood that a woman won't produce enough milk when trying to breastfeed. This is not an NFP person. This is not, you know, a Catholic radical. This is from Our Bodies Ourselves, which is a pretty feminist article. In addition, women who seek breast implants are more likely to have body dysmorphic disorder, BDD, which is defined by the American Psychiatric Association as, quote, a preoccupation with an imagined or slight defect in appearance that leads to a significant impairment in functioning. We are not going to be able to finish this article. This is so worth finishing. I'm going to get back on and read to you. I'm so glad that I did not just ignore this moment. I had a nudging that this is time, and it is time. And I want to talk, we're talking about breast implants now, but I want to talk about labioplasty even more and more. I am telling you that you have a path, your daughters have a path, and you have a path to that purpose, God's path. He does not want your daughter's feet bound or your metaphorical feet bound by having to deal with repeat surgeries or perhaps loss of nipple sensation or other things that happen in their lives because of some decision that was not enlightened when they were 13 years old because of the going cultural thought of the day. Tomorrow, please stay tuned. I'm going to read to you about how we sanitize language to make some of this stuff seem, yeah, pretty okay to me. So, and not really to me, Dr. Michelle, but okay to the general public. So we are going to get back on course. You're all loving people. Nothing is irreparable. Let's get on the right path together. I am Dr. Michelle. We will see you tomorrow. Dr. Michelle, bye.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.